Words on Water.
Today, the Water Environment Federation is happy to put on the first of a series, we hope, of business roundtables to talk about some of the effects regarding coronavirus and the impact that it's having on the water and wastewater community. I'm Walt Marlowe. I'm the Executive Director of the Water Environment Federation, and I'm lucky today to have five very prominent and very experienced leaders in the water industry are here to give us a little bit of an insight into what they see coming up, especially in response to coronavirus. Our first panelist, we have Ted Hennepin, and Ted is general manager of the Hampton Roads Sanitation District. Ted joined HRSD in November 26 as a general manager. He previously served as director of public works for the city of Hampton, and his career spanned more than 35 years with a focus on public works and utilities in federal, regional, and local government in Hampton Roads. So, Ted, welcome to today's roundtable.
Thank you, Walt. Appreciate being here and the great panelists that I'm with. I'm in awe. Especially you.
Especially the beards, right?
I shaved. I made a mistake.
Yeah. So our next panelist is Rich D'Amato. Rich is the Chief Executive Officer of Brown & Caldwell. Rich joined Brown & Caldwell from CH2M Hill, where he's Senior Vice President for the $500 million Operations and Maintenance Business Group. And during his 21-year tenure with CH2M Hill, Rich held various senior positions supporting the firm's industrial and municipal operations and business development. So welcome, Rich.
Thanks, Walt. It's also an honor to be here with everybody.
Our third panelist, Cindy Wallace-Lage. Cindy's president of Black & Veatch's water business, leading more than 2,500 professionals in over 75 offices worldwide. Cindy joined the company in 1986 and is well known in the water industry for expertise in water reuse and treatment. She's been involved in more than 100 projects around the world in both the municipal and industrial sectors. So welcome, Cindy.
Thanks. It's great to be with everybody. Although I couldn't grow a beard.
That's a good thing.
Our next panelist is Yuvbir Singh. He's Chief Executive Officer of Suez's Water Technologies and Solutions. And that's global business focused on water-related challenges. They employ approximately 10,000 people and operate in over 100 countries. So Water Technologies and Solutions provides innovative solutions that address water availability and quality needs while improving customers' productivity and meeting increasingly stringent environmental regulations. So welcome you here.
Thanks, Walt. Great to be here.
And our fifth panelist today is Patrick Decker, who's President and Chief Executive Officer of Xylem, and assumed that position in March of 2014. And he joins Xylem from Harsco Corporation, a global industrial services company, where he was president, chief executive officer since 2012. Prior to that, he served in a number of leadership roles at Tyco International's flow control business, ultimately serving as president of Tyco Flow Control, a $4 billion leader in industrial flow control solutions. So welcome, Patrick.
Well, thank you, Walt, and the team for arranging this, first of all, and for all you're doing. And again, I got my first in-home haircut last night, so but I lost the razor.
So our WEF community and the broader water industry certainly has had a lot of impacts from coronavirus. I don't think there's any aspect of the global economy or any of our industries have been untouched. And we've had an emergency response to that. I think some of the initial scientific information is getting digested. Our workers are typically frontline workers. They're essential. They're out there in the trenches. They're keeping our systems working, keeping the public safe. But that raises a lot of questions to, okay, what's the future for our industry, especially with some of the economic pullback, the projections of maybe a recession or possibly even a depression coming up. So first of all, I wanted to ask each of you, how has your business been affected by coronavirus? And I'm going to start off asking Ted on the utility operator front there.
Sure, Walt. So, as an essential industry and critical sector, and on the wastewater side, same with water, but on the wastewater side, it never stops. You know, we can't tell our customers, hey, we're going to take a break and figure out how to recover from this coronavirus. So we had to keep business going as usual, and to a great extent. That was our goal, was really not to disrupt the lives of our folks. And we sat down as a senior management team and looked and said, this isn't a 1 week or 2 week recovery like a hurricane or even a month. This is going to be the long haul. And the less we can disturb their lives by changing major schedules and shifts, the better off we're going to be in the long haul. So we took social distancing and PPE very seriously and figured out ways to really make that a way of life. And so it's, I think we've done a pretty good job to this point. We've had one suspected case, and due to social distancing, that person didn't take anyone out with them. So that's a huge win from our perspective. In our region, the folks that are having issues, it's about 8 to 1 for every confirmed case, how many people get quarantined as a result. And I think the fact that we had one and nobody else get quarantined was pretty amazing. We've had a couple household contact quarantines, but we've put in really good procedures in place to work through our human resource group. So folks know to report if they've got any symptoms, had any relatives, been traveling. And it's really become a cultural shift for us. And the wearing of face masks is a requirement. And we jumped on the cloth face mask concept as soon as the CDC announced it. We were a little challenged to come up with them, and we found a creative way to make that happen. And so everyone's got their face masks. And it's just constantly working with the folks that are working for you, all the rest of the panelists too. We've got to interact with our consultants and contractors on a regular basis, and we're trying to make sure they follow our process and procedures when they're on site with our contracts. But we did let as many people that could telework. Out of our 850 folks, about 250 are teleworking, and that creates an internal stress, the sort of haves and have nots, the people you have to put in harm's way every day. And we really have avoided any kind of hero pay or bonuses or anything else, again, recognizing this is really probably the new normal. And so to a great extent, this is the way we're going to continue to operate. We don't, even as the discussions around reopening Virginia and other parts of our economy, our plan is to stick with the telework as many as we can for as long as we can make that effective. We were in great position to make that happen, probably a lot more luck than anything else. We had just converted our entire IT system to Surface Pros. And so nobody had to take home a big computer. They all had Surface Pros to go home with. And we've been electronic on our bid platform, and consultant and vendors have all dealt with us electronically for several years. So we were in good shape just by luck, I think, more than anything else. But so it's largely business as usual and a lot of focused social distancing where we can.
Excellent. Yeah, Rich, how has Brown and Caldwell been affected?
Oh, thanks. We're doing well. At Brown and Caldwell, as an employee-owned firm, one of our strategic foundations has been to be the best virtual company that we can be before this pandemic hit. So we focused a lot on tools and technology. I think we're about 1,700 people, and the week before it, we had around 1,200 people in a given week working from somewhere other than their home office already. So when this hit, it hit fast. The velocity and the magnitude that this hit was incredible. And within 1 week, 65% of our offices were under a shelter in place. We have 53 offices in the United States, and over 90% of our workforce was working from home already because of the pandemic. So from that standpoint, it's been, business as usual with some new twists. There is some fatigue going on, and not everybody's used to being at home every single day. But our main purpose, like you said, we're blessed to be supporting essential services like HRSD and other clients. So we have to do what we can to help keep their important projects going. We did see a small slowdown. Maybe about 5% of our business was either slowed down or stopped because of COVID. And we did have to take some tough decisions on some furloughs because we have to manage our, we have to balance our labor with our revenue, you know, from as being a consultant. So those were tough decisions that we don't like to make. But as soon as those projects get started back up, we want to bring those people back on as quickly as we can. You know, it's been interesting to see how some of our clients were well prepared for this, and a lot of our clients weren't prepared to be working at home. And so we've spent a lot of time working with them, holding seminars, teaching them how to use remote technologies, teaching them how to do meetings. So we're just trying to do everything we can to be with our clients right now and understand what their needs are. You know, we do both field work and at home work. And so we're doing a lot of construction projects as well as we do some a little bit of O&M in the private sector space, as well as O&M support. And we're seeing a lot of demand there right now. And just like Ted said, we're having to take the proper precautions, make sure our people are safe and protected, because that's the number one, is making sure that everybody is very safe and comfortable in what they're doing. So all in all, given what it's taken, you know, I've been amazed at the resiliency, the adaptability of our people. And our clients, in terms of, you know, just all of a sudden throwing a switch on and everybody's working in a new way to keep those essential services going to the public. So that's been good. You know, as I talk to a lot of our clients, I'm spending a lot of time with our people and our clients. Every day I'm just calling folks to like you said earlier, Walt, to figure out what's on their mind, what can we do to help, what should we be looking for. And I think that initial hit and surprise of the pandemic is kind of occurred, and now we're, you know, so that was the response mode. Now we're in the enduring phase, where we're enduring what's going on, where we figured out how to work. And then there's going to be this evolving phase. And that's where we're trying to spend a lot of time, because we've got the other bases covered, is what is this going to look like afterwards, or how soon is this going to come in? And what most people are telling me and how they feel is, they're okay right now. You know, in our company, you know, I'm sure Cindy's going to say the same thing. We've had great years, so we have a strong backlog of work to support our clients. But it's really, you know, Q4 and into 2021, what is that going to look like? You know, clients are talking about revenues being impacted now, maybe revenues that they're not going to be able to collect, that they're having to forego. So is that going to stop projects or slow future projects down? We're tracking that very closely right now. We actually had our strongest sales quarter, just ended the second quarter in 4 years. But a lot of that was baked beforehand, you know, before COVID hit. Some of it occurred while this was happening, some fast burn projects. But now we're looking at the number of proposals that are still ongoing with COVID, and we haven't seen a slowdown yet. So we're optimistic that our clients need to keep pushing their projects through. I think it's going to be a question of the money. Where's the money going to come from? Is the revenue going to be there? A lot of our clients have different revenue models. And then the last thing I'll say, we've actually had, I would say about 30 to 40% of our business has accelerated. Some of our clients are trying to figure out, how do we get shovel-ready projects, you know, on the shelf, so that when anticipated stimulus comes in, they can apply for that stimulus and get projects moving quicker. So we've had a lot of our design work accelerate, actually, so that we can, you know, get these projects done and designed and ready to go for when stimulus does hit the street. So
excellent. Yeah. Well, Cindy Rich mentioned you and Black and Veatch, so how about giving us a bit of an update of what the effects you've seen?
Yeah, so I echo a lot of what Rich said. You know, one of the things that we had the fortune or misfortune, just because of the way this is not a good situation with COVID, is we saw this coming very early with our offices in Asia. We already had challenges seeing it in Hong Kong. We were in Singapore, seeing the challenges into then the Philippines. And so we were well prepared of seeing what do we need to be thinking about such that as it was rolling, we could be well ahead of it and making the decisions that we needed such that we were seamless. And I felt we did have a very seamless transition. I was amazed, much like Rich noted, that the flexibility and the agility, you know, we moved 11,000 people across all of Black and Beach to work from home in a very, very short period of time, and really have been excited to see how this has actually helped us in some of the things that we do, right? I mean, we've always worked virtually. We already had our teams working globally and communication, and now you probably have people a little bit happier to bring in the video because they want to have the conversation. And the connection that I think that you see between our own staff, but then with our clients and with our partners, you know, you just have a little bit more realness, right? Whether it's kids walking in the room or the dog starts barking or, oh shoot, there's a lawnmower outside. Excuse me, I got to close the window. And so there, I feel like a sense of community has been really strong, and the willingness to want to reach out, to work differently, to ask for help, right? To be able to say, how can I get help, or how can I give help? How can I help you? And so that connection with our clients is they're going through different, you know, stages of how do they manage, as Rich noted. Some people are on top of it, really strong. Ted leading the way, moved quickly to a whole new way of working. Others are struggling of, I don't have the resources. I don't have a business continuity plan. I don't know how we're going to manage this. I don't have enough staff. You know, what does it look like? How do I get the PPE? How do I work through a myriad of questions? And so we want to be there to be that partner, bringing the lessons learned that we have from around the globe, bringing that to bear, and then really helping starting that conversation of that resilience planning. I think if there's anything this has taught us, it really has been that big shout out to, we've been talking about resilience being so critical to our industry, and resilience across funding, resilience across operations, resilience in our strategies to be able to make sure that we can continue to deliver for our communities around the globe, such a critical, critical resource and infrastructure that will make them sustainable, that's going to make the quality of life there for everyone, rich and poor, right? So we've got to find that balance. And so that resilience planning is absolutely critical. And so, you know, for me, that is one of the areas that I see as such a great opportunity to continue to elevate the conversation in our industry of what we need to do, and also just the criticality of what we do. If hygiene hasn't come through as a critical element to people and the importance of watering it at this point in time, nothing ever will, right? And so we got to capitalize on that. And so being able to engage with the WEF, being able to engage with a lot of the industry organizations, how do we elevate the conversations? How do we drive these forward such that this doesn't become, whew, we survived it, and we move right back to where we were? Black and Beach isn't going back. You know, we're looking at the future and what that's going to be like and how we can make a difference. And we got to keep the industry moving that way too. So I think that it's been rough on people in some respects, but you know, it's been seamless. We haven't missed a beat with our clients and our projects. And, you know, the market has still been strong, as Rich noted. People are still moving with those projects, and we want to make sure that we're there helping them, but also seeing what does this look like in the future? And there's a whole lot of things that includes, but I'll wait for the next question.
Thanks for bringing the passion out for our industry. You know, after not being in the water industry for a few years, coming back to it last fall made me really feel so comfortable that the people involved in this industry care so passionately about what they're delivering for public health. You know, it's just really amazing. Let me switch over to you to hear some of the effects you've seen at Suez.
So the way we've been looking at this, you know, since the inception of the pandemic is really three different angles, probably the safety of the employees, supply chain and service continuity, and then just being able to serve our customers. Like you said, we had about 10,000 employees. They're all over the world. There's about 5,000 of them in the field, and they've been in the field all the time, whether they're at our factories, whether they are at our customer sites or our labs. We've got tens of manufacturing plants around the world, but about 14 of them that have more than 100 employees. Some of them have 500, and one of them has 1,000 as well. So just to give you a perspective, our facility in Orzlani in Hungary, where we make ultrafiltration membranes, it's been up and running at plant capacity all throughout the duration. Minnesota in Minnetonka, we've got about 500 people making RO membranes, again, at plant capacity through the entire quarter, which is incredible considering the circumstances. And the supply chain's been up and running as well as our suppliers. We have a big facility in Boulder where we make analytical instruments, which does a total organic carbon monitoring, basically, which supplies the pharmaceutical industry, where there's a lot of drug development, vaccine development, and diagnostic kits that are being developed as well. So that facility has been running like crazy to supply pharmaceutical customers as well. So just overall, just a small blip in our China facility for a few days. And other than that, all our plants have been up and running, which is just incredible considering the circumstances. From a business perspective, we've got a pretty diverse portfolio mix and a footprint as well. The biggest impact we're seeing is probably in the refinery space. They're running at historically low levels. We have a fair amount of presence there. I'd say steel, automotive plants, and other plants that are shuttered on the industrial side are also hurting the business. We see some bright spots in food and beverage, in the pharmaceutical space. And then we're seeing some good momentum come back in China, Korea, and Taiwan as well, which is terrific. But, of all things, like Cindy mentioned as well, I'm just impressed by the efforts, the tenacity, the resilience of our employees to weather this thing. The business continuity through this time has been just phenomenal. And I'm just thankful to be able to lead a great team like this.
Great. Patrick, how about wrapping up the effects that you see with Xylem?
Yeah, so thanks, Walt, for having me join this panel. So much has been said, so I not to take advantage of the art of the echo, that I just want to echo all that's been said here, but I do want to echo what's all been said. When I think about what our overall mission and purpose is as companies and this organization of WEF, I think it's really important that we never lose sight of what that overall purpose is. We are all probably zoomed out at this point in time in terms of the Zoom videos we've done, although this is one of the best I've had this week. The number of times that I've looked out to my left window here, and I've seen either, two people in a manhole cover, or people doing the power lines. I think we just can't lose sight of, we're here to serve them. That's just a fact. And so we at Xylem have the opportunity of being a global organization like my colleagues here. We've been kind of following the curve in terms of, it hit in Wuhan. We've got an office, sales team, service center there in Wuhan. And I had the opportunity in the very first week when they were quarantined to do a phone call with them at the time, just to give them our support for, none of us knew at that point kind of where it was going to go, but we knew already it was having a big impact on the morale of our people and their ability to fulfill that purpose and mission. It then moved, it hit Europe hard, it hit Italy hard, it hit one of our big factories in Montecchio hard. And from that, the silver lining was we were able to put in the immediate protocols from a safety standpoint, from the testing standpoint. We were all over our supply chain at that standpoint. And that really has helped us tremendously in terms of, and Cindy made the comment, resilience. I mean, the resiliency of our supply chain and infrastructure, which is so important, not so much from a business standpoint, but to support the customers, to serve the frontline utilities. So as my panelists, you've been on so many phone calls with our utility friends here. Ted, you being, you know, at the lead of that, you're such a great proxy for that, on what is a day in the life of a utility right now. And a big part of that is just knowing that those of us that are on the service end are there and available to help, that our supply chain's up and running, that our people are out there on the front line doing things in a safe way. And so I start with that. We've been focused very much also on, it's not just what we do from a commercial standpoint, it's what we do with our communities in terms of, we've always prided ourselves, and I know my panelist friends here have, on our various community outreach programs. And I have just been blown away. I mean, all we had to do was light a fire in terms of, there are these funds and programs available for matching programs with our customers, matching programs with our communities. How do we get kids that are staying at home, teachers that are doing the hard work, the heavy lifting of online learning? How do we build water education into the curriculum and then give them the toolkits to have those conversations? You know, to Cindy's point, if we as a society don't figure it out now that safety and health connected to water isn't kind of pretty important, we're never going to figure it out. And so we've been really encouraging our colleagues to find creative ways to really get that message out. Lastly, we have, like others, we're making some tough choices. We're pulling back on certain operating expenses, certain capital expenditures, but we're doing it in a strategic way to say, where were things that we were spending money on before that just aren't nearly as important now as the new trends that are emerging? And what does life look like on the other side of this curve? From an innovation technology standpoint, how do we interact and interface with our customers, not just utilities, but industrial, commercial building? You know, they're behaving in different ways. So how do we take advantage of tools that we've got here, but also be respectful of our customers, that there are going to be different ways of doing things and different things are going to matter than they did before. I'd leave you with this. You know, I was on a great session last week with some other business leaders, and somebody made the comment that really hit me. And that was, when you come out of these crises, when you look back at the global financial crisis, 9/11, the oil shock back in the late 70s, early 80s, there were very few brand new things that came out of this. What happened was trends that already existed got accelerated. And this whole notion of being able to work remotely and virtually in different ways is just going to get accelerated along the way. So I'll leave it with that. I know you have some follow-up questions that I can respond to, but I'm so pleased to be on here with my colleagues in the water sector.
Thanks. Well, I you know, you're hitting on a bunch of good topics, and I know some of the other speakers also hinted at kind of the forward-looking view after dealing with the immediacy of the outbreak of the pandemic. I know our viewers would be interested in hearing from you all. You know, is there one or a couple of issues that you see really rising to importance over the next 6 to 12 months as you're operating the business? And are there any specific actions that you're taking right now to kind of move the organization or prepare it for those big issues in 6 to 12 months? Patrick, you got the end of the rope last time. I'll let you keep going right on. For the second part here.
Oh, that's trouble to let him go first.
I think for us, the two big things that we're focused on, and I really look forward to hearing what my colleagues here are saying. I think this notion of affordability. We've gone through this before in terms of big shocks to the system, in terms of there are still fundamental essential services that have to be maintained and move forward, but there's going to be an economic hit here. That's just a reality. How long it goes, we don't know, but it's not, you know, it ain't going to get any prettier anytime soon. And so I think how we can work with our utility friends to help them address that in ways that we've been talking about before. We've been moving along in terms of whether it be digital, whether it be using data to be even smarter around managing operating expenses, CapEx, whether it be the efficiency of existing infrastructure or new things being added. The whole affordability angle, I think, is going to be a big, big challenge here over the coming months. And so we're very much focused on how do we accelerate and leverage our portfolio to have different kind of conversations with our customers. I know procurement schemes have been difficult to navigate in many cases. There are a number of them that are able to use emergency procurement protocols to try new things, to get them going. So that's one theme that we certainly are looking at. I think, secondly, this whole notion of how do we help our customers work in a new norm where they're going to have, I mean, one of the common themes I've heard thus far is the case rates from an infection standpoint of many utilities across the world, certainly in the U.S., is placing huge constraint on their productivity even right now. And I think there are opportunities for us from an innovation standpoint to be there behind them and beside them to help weather this and then find that there are probably ways to do everything in a more productive fashion than what we've done up to this point in time. Lastly, again, I come back to where Cindy left off, and that is building resilience into the overall infrastructure, because this is not going to be the last time we have one of these hits to the system. And I think working with our utilities to help them plan for that and what things to think about and what are the technologies that are there to help support that is necessary and a meaningful opportunity.
Great. Well, Patrick, we lost you on the video there, but we heard your voice.
It's okay. So you know what I look like.
Well, you mentioned Cindy, so I'm going to toss it over to Cindy for her take on the next 6 to 12 month issues.
Yeah, I appreciate the comments, Patrick. Those are all spot on. I think this whole financial balancing act that we've got to work through with what's going to happen out of the current economic situation, but also we've never addressed the affordability effectively. We still don't have full cost recovery in a lot of places. We've got so much to do, again, so how we can support into that resilience being having that financial impact. That operational piece of resilience, I think the digital answer is going to move faster. So when I think about where we've been, you know, this time frame, as somebody mentioned earlier, it's just accelerated strategies, right? We were already in that, what does that workforce of the future look like? We were already in that embracing digital. There had been probably not as welcome a reception sometimes on embracing digital. And people were hesitant as to what did that mean, the risk with it, is it necessary, which way do I go, how far do I go? And I think there's going to be a lot more planning, and we're very focused in that space and have several offerings that can help drive that to get into dealing with workforce challenges, getting with efficiency, helping with overall costs, predictability, being able to anticipate how assets are going to perform, and then being able to understand when we need to invest into those assets so that we are just much tighter, you know, on our window of operation, which helps us with some of the financial challenges that we have. And I think moving into that space is really, I think, going to accelerate, and I think it's going to accelerate at a global scale. Everybody sees that this is a tremendous opportunity to be able to move that forward. And I think that helps us, you know, it was interesting, Patrick, that you mentioned the productivity. Because one of the comments that I've had recently is now showing us really how productive we can actually be versus how much activity we actually can have, right? Because
absolutely.
We have had a lot of activity and a lot of it's really fun, and I miss the fun parts and I hate not having web tech the way we have it in the past, but it probably has elevated that we can be much more productive if we use tools differently and how we connect. What I think we have to find though is how sustainable, where are we going to fall in between this activity and productivity? And where does that fall that's going to give us the best result? Because we also have to be cautious that we don't go so far that we miss out on some of that connectivity that's going to make a difference in innovation, that's going to, that brainstorming, the way we can think differently, we operate differently, those haphazard conversations that really can spark our industry and spark change. So I think what we're going to have to find is, what does that look like? We're living our current reality, but it's a forced reality. We need to find, what is that new balance, that new norm that lets us really capitalize on the strength of the digital, how we can work and deliver projects very differently to support our clients. How do we connect with them? What works best for the clients? What works best from a safety standpoint? And frankly, we can even think about how we can, maybe if we change our industry a little bit, how much do we make a difference, not only in our water space, but just the overall climate change challenges, right? There are no planes in the sky. And we are on a lot of planes, and I miss my plane rides, frankly. But it is, you know, how do we balance that so we're getting, again, the most productive use out of those times? So for us, we're going to be very focused on that, new innovations that can come through out of this. I see that we're sparking so many different things we can do with sensors, what we can be doing more from an automation standpoint, what we can be doing more from just all of the different technologies that are out there, and developing truly that resilient system. So our focus is really to help our industry to be as resilient as possible. As Patrick said, it's something else will happen. We didn't see this one, but we've lived through others in the past. Something else will happen. And every time we can be stronger, but we need to be a lot stronger on the other side of this one.
Hey, Walt, I just real quick. So Cindy, you mentioned to the whole notion of, finding the balance. I had an all hands session this morning, and one of the great questions came up was, can we quit using the word social distancing and maybe use like safe distancing or something other than social?
Right. Anyway. Yeah, it's missing the social. Beer, how about issues at Suez?
So from our side, I think, you know, three or four areas that, you know, I think will have impact and will work around is supply chain. I think, you know, we've built in plenty of contingencies and redundancy, but I think it's fundamentally going to change the kind of partnership, the partnerships that we have with our suppliers. I'd say second, I'd echo what Cindy and Patrick said about digital. We have a platform called Insight, which is asset performance management, remote monitoring, diagnostics. And I think the usage on that has been incredible. And as our folks haven't been able to get to sites, we've been managing a lot of those sites remotely. And I think that's going to be here to stay. And I think we'll continue to evolve those platforms with AI and control and other things as well. Another piece is our engineering and our finance infrastructure is in India. And there's several hundred people that we have there. And I was extremely worried about the ability to work from home, internet connections and the like. And we've managed to keep that operation going. And surprisingly, the productivity has gone up. People don't have to drive 3 hours in Bangalore traffic. And you know, I think, Cindy, to your point again there, I think the productivity is so great. I'm not sure we will go back to offices in the future necessarily at the same rate. Teams has become the new normal. I'm not used to Zoom yet. So, you know, we've been using it day and night, and whether it's staff meetings or customer negotiations, we closed a few deals on Teams, believe it or not. And then happy hour as well. So, I mean, we've been using it extensively and, you know, that's become the new office. So I think just generally, I'd say less travel, a lot more digital, a lot more virtual, less offices, and new business models that are going to emerge out of this thing.
Okay, thanks. Rich, how about your perspective from Brown and Caldwell?
Yeah, it's very similar to what the other panelists have said. I mean, digital water is what we call it. It's we already have the capability to do this, and a lot of our clients are doing it. And I think that this is going to drive this faster, because there were some of our clients that were hesitant on trusting the technology or the digital approach, and now being forced into it, they actually see that it can work. And the challenges that they're facing about how do we operate, and if we had a little bit more digital control and automation, then maybe we wouldn't be putting as many people in, you know, close environments, or, you know, putting people at risk because of that. So we're seeing a lot of that. The other thing that we're seeing is through some of these digital water systems, there's an ability to more accurately generate revenue from, say, industrial pretreatment users and things like that. And so as we've used the connectivity to monitor remotely, we're also finding that it can accurately tell what's coming into the system, when is it coming in, so that we can charge appropriately based on that. And so with revenues being suppressed in some areas, that's an important thing. I think the other big thing is just going to be the way that we work. And the other panelists alluded to that. A lot of what we do is provide guidance and formats to make decisions and help our clients through that by sharing our experiences and what we've learned. And the traditional way is like what Cindy said, we all get on a plane and we get six of us in a room with a client. And that's expensive, and the clients usually pay for that. So if we can maybe, you know, do two of those meetings instead of six and do the other four remotely, there's big savings there that we can then apply that money elsewhere where other needs are. So I think there's going to be some efficiency gains on how projects are done as a result of this. But the resiliency thing's huge. And again, technology plays a big role there. But you know, the one thing is the Zoom, the Teams, you know, we're a team shop as well. It works, but it's not the same, you know, and this industry has always been a relationship-based industry. And so there is the human element of being in the same room or breaking bread with your clients and your partners. So it's going to come back together to some different meeting. It's not going to be the same as it always has always been. But I don't think it's going to be the true gig economy where everybody works at home and that's it, we're all done. But, you know, like I say, everyone's questioning, do you need a big downtown office? You know, could you have several smaller offices? I'm sure, you know, footprint, you know, for us, leasing costs are one of our largest expenses. And a lot of our people that didn't think they could work at home, it might have, you know, put up a little bit of a fuss about, you know, maybe not having a shared hotel and office for when you're in there. They're probably looking at this now. I know I've talked to them saying, wow, you know, I get 2 hours more a day that I'm not on the bus or I'm not on the subway. I'm willing to share an office on the 3 days I come in with somebody else, you know, for the convenience and ability to work at home and be more productive. So there'll be a happy medium somewhere in there. But a lot of what everybody said, I agree 100% with.
Yeah. I think the old saying, progress moves at the speed of trust, is really applicable during this. Because the organizations that have built a lot of trust within their own staff and with their clients, I think have really been able to, you know, transition very quickly to this. And I think that'll be critical going forward. Ted, how about your comments on these big issues for the next 6 to 12?
I echo a lot of what's been said, and I do think it's that balance, because I think your clients now are going to be demanding a little less of those six-person meetings and I think we're finding this to be extremely time efficient, and you know, people show up on time. There's no delays in flights, and there's nobody lost in transit, and you get right to the point and you go. But I agree, we need to figure out how the relationship's going. So there is going to have to be that balance. I think you've all had said that. You know, I think the one thing I can add is, at least from our perspective, during the big economic downturn, we put our foot to the metal and just accelerated every construction project we could think of as much as we could afford. We got money cheap and we got great competition and we got a lot of great stuff built. And you know, we're already looking that way right now. We see money's never been cheaper, and we're attacking our WIFIA loan with great gusto, trying to get that closed in record time, because I think Seattle just closed at 1.01. On a $200 million loan. So you know, we've got our whole SWIFT project and program set up, and we'd love to get that money locked in with you and get get that. That's one way we're going to help save our ratepayers, because about half of our annual income revenues come in to support our capital program and our debt service. And operating isn't going to, shaving a little bit off of our operating isn't going to make a difference for us. It's got to be finding ways to save money and either avoid construction, which, we've used some of your technologies, Patrick, to help maybe offset some tank projects. And I know we're looking at some other ideas of how we can use our existing infrastructure better. But at the end of the day, digital and all that great stuff, we still have to replace aging infrastructure. You got to get someone out there to dig it up and replace it. And you want to do the right ones at the right time. And we're focused on asset management. I think you talked about that, Cindy.
Yep.
I think those are all areas we'll be focused on, because affordability is critical. But at the end of the day, we've still got people to operate treatment plants. They, no matter how much digital we put in there, there's still some regulatory requirements and things break. And we haven't found a way to have a robot come in and replace the pump. Maybe that's out there and it's going to be there at some point, but we're a ways away. So I think I echo all of what you're saying, that work's going to be different. It's going to be different for us, but we still have people to put out in the field just like you do, and we appreciate the support we're getting from all of you, and it's going to need to continue, and it is going to be very different going forward. But we want to be part of the economic stimulus. So whether it's money coming from the federal government or whether we have to borrow it cheaply, we want to continue to put projects out and get great teamwork going. We do almost every big project now, design build, and I know many of you are, at least a couple of you are very focused on that, and that's great. And we look forward to continuing those relationships. But,
yeah. Great. Well, you guys covered a lot of great information. Probably running a little short on time here. But let me ask each of you if you have, a final thought to leave our viewers with as they contemplate this pandemic and where we're going. Beer, let me start with you. See, we got a last comment for everyone.
I think the pandemic's going to be here and we're going to get past it. And I think, I made a post on Earth Day as well. I think the environment, the concerns, we did an interview with about 2,000 Americans on water shortage and water scarcity, and 70% of them said that it's going to be an issue. But 30% agreed that, they'd be willing to drink reused water, basically, for potable purposes, and 50% for irrigation. So, I don't think those fundamental things are going to change. And I think the focus is going to continue from a water and wastewater perspective. And that's what we got to think about going into the future.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rich, how about you? Any last comments?
I think we're all blessed to be an essential service, and thank Ted and all our clients for being out there on the front lines. And we're proud to be able to support that. We're going to get through this. It is going to change the way we work, I think, for the better. The one thing, I think everyone's doing their part from a standpoint of obeying the shelter in place requirements and things like that. So I've been really amazed at how the industry has come together. We're all, friends and competitors, but we're sharing information with each other, just like you're doing here while trying to get information out there. And I've been amazed at how well my peer CEOs and our competitors and us have been getting together, because that's what we do, right? We're all in this together, and we're going to get through it together. So just really makes me proud to be part of this industry where people are so focused on communities. Patrick, like you said, that's something that's really near and dear to us as well. So we'll get through it. And thanks for everyone that's been helping us out, and anything we can do to help people out, we're just great.
Patrick, do you want to follow up on that or other comments?
I would just say that, first of all, Walt, again, I want to thank you and the team at WEF for bringing this together, because you've been a tremendous source of information. The website's been terrific. The traffic there has been amazing, just to get information out in a time of ambiguity and uncertainty. Our three guiding principles, as I've heard ring through our guest here as well, is we're taking care of the safety and well-being of our colleagues, because we're all in this together, and they're out on the front line. They're interfacing with, Ted and your team and other utilities, and we want to make sure we're all doing it safe here. Secondly, though, it is making sure that we don't lose sight of those two folks in the manhole cover that I referred to earlier. that are out there keeping essential services going every day. And our job is to keep it really simple and really focused. I say to our team all the time, stay safe, stay strong, stay focused on what's happening here. I just want to reinforce the community comment that each of our organizations have the resources and means to reach further out into the communities and make sure that we are doing things beyond purely our commercial means along the way. And then lastly, I think the people who watch us will know we're all looking at innovation to make sure that we lead in this way to help the sector as it moves into a new norm, so to speak. But again, thanks for having me on here, and I really appreciate I'm just honored to be on here with the other panelists.
Sure, great. Yeah, Ted, any last thoughts?
I'll just, this maybe helps the rest of us that maybe didn't have enough imagination around Black Swan events to really understand what that means. I don't think any of us had truly envisioned a worldwide pandemic that would do this kind of both economic damage and shake the foundations of our businesses. So I think that helps us maybe plan better for resiliency in the future. And maybe some of the other comments around climate change, maybe there is some hope that we can make, bend the curve there and do something. And finally, even with all the digital and all the success we've had there, it all came down to people. And we had some tremendous leaders that were willing to really help make this happen within our organization and within our sector. And I think that's, we can't lose track of the fact that we need to keep developing great leaders to keep the water sector going forward.
Great. Cindy, we'll give you the last word today. Any thoughts?
I want to say thank you for everybody in the water industry that's listening to this, for all that they do every day to prioritize our sector and do the things we do for the communities, the quality of life, for life in itself, for people around the globe. I would say at this point, we need to really embrace what the changes are that we have seen and see how we can be better. We have been a silent sector for way too long. We accept, we move on, we're diligent, we persevere, we continue to deliver for communities everywhere. And we need to take this time to really capitalizing on the phrases of today, the rise up, right? How are we going to make a difference in our sector such that it is giving us the long-term sustainable resilience that we need to help communities and people everywhere of all levels and everything that's going to make a difference? So thrilled to be a part of this sector, have been my whole life, wouldn't be anywhere else, and happy to work with all of my team members here. And I know that we can make a difference and we'll come out of this really, really embracing water as the importance it plays in our economics and our health and our safety every day in every way.
Well, thanks. Thanks to all of you today. I mean, this is incredible insight into what's going on in our industry. And I hope that everybody who's viewing today really recognizes the passion that not only these leaders bring to the table, but that our workforce brings to the table every day during this crisis and all the time.
Words on water.